Come on. Hello and welcome to Dynamite Teddy. It's the retro game podcast where a couple of owl pals get together and talk about a couple of owl games. The voice you're hearing just now is myself, Mick Clockerty. Joining me, as always, we have Mr. Mick McCormick.
How's it going?
And Mr. Andy Mack.
Konnichiwa.
And you can't hear him, but he's at my side. I've got Smudgy the Rabbit here as well. God bless him. Now, listener, we're finally here with the Akira Toriyama special. I know there's maybe two or three of you that have been waiting on it, out of however many are supposedly meant to listen. And if you have been waiting on this, you can blame fucking Johnny Branchfield, as me and Mick have been away on his stag.
Akira Yama's been wandering Snake Road for about 3 months at this point.
How'd you go on, man? Was it good?
Oh, tremendous. I'm now a Atletico Baleares fan for life.
Nice.
I've got my wee Catalan team forever, or my Yorkine team.
We can save that story for the next football special, otherwise we'll be here all night.
Aye, we might do. But no, congratulations once again to Johnny and Ainsley. Boys, for the last month or so, I've been living in Akira Toriyama's world, right? I went deep cover here. I've been watching Dragon Ball for weeks at this point. Hardly anything else has been on my telly. Cunts are asking me, like, oh, have you seen Fallout yet, Mick, and that? And I'm thinking, like, no, but I could probably give you my top five Goku fights. Like, it's been consuming my life. I've been playing the games. I've been watching a show. I've been all about it. I've been all about the man himself.
It's good crack, man. Good to watch. It's good to look at. It's funny. It's probably my favourite cartoon that isn't called South Park.
Well, I know you, of any is, Andy, you're probably the one who has watched the cartoon the most, like, as a grown-up. Like, I remember watching this a bit in my teens when anime was still a wee bit out there and weird, other than the Pokemon cartoon. And I remember catching this a bit, but I've not really seen it for a long time. No, I could fucking talk your ear off about it. But you've kind of never gone away. You've always kind of gone back to this in one way or another.
We're not talking levels, but I always heard about this. And
there you go, Mr. Editor McCormick. Here's your first bleep of the episode.
And I remember, like, fucking when I was jumping about with kind of Sonic fan game shit and that. For some reason, this was always, like, attached to it, like, the art styles and...
Well, I mean, we all know what Super Sonic is, innit? It's just Super Saiyan.
That's it. Aye, it's funny, you get 7 Dragon Balls, you get 7 Chaos Emeralds, you turn into this kind of glowing, kind of Yera thing, and yeah, all that shit, but aye, it's definitely there.
I'm sure some of our lovely Virgin listeners will be huge Dragon Ball nerds, and for our intro bump, we have got a kind of game that we play on Neddy sometimes where we pick 5 cunts for a property and it's like, who would you invite to the pub? In Mr. McCormick's case, he is more sexually active than any is, so he can't speak as much about Dragon Ball. So we're letting him do just Akira Toriyama in general. So some of Mick's might be a Chrono Trigger, some of them might be a Dragon Quest, some of them might be the other things. Me and Andy, as I understand it, are just Dragon Ball.
Right.
And Mr. MacArthur, I remember when I put this wee idea in the chat, you seconds later replied, "I've already got mine."
Aye.
And when you said that, I thought he's going first. So Andy, we're not going to do 1-1-1 round table because we'll be here all night. Here's your 5, and you can explain as you go.
Number 5, right? Got to be done. I'm not going anywhere without this cunt. Right? Chase for Ginyu Force.
Is he the Aussie one?
Aye. The only reason is, like, you're watching, like, Dragon Ball, right, and it's all just your standard kind of American voices you would hear on any other cartoon. And this mad cunt comes in all orange and
all right, Captain Ginyu. And you're like, whoa, where's Space Australia, man?
Aye, and I'm a big Steve Irwin fan, right? He really, like, I think he really embodies, like, the best parts of human nature. Just this guy, like, kind of reminds me of him. I'd take him with me and I'd ask him about the Crocodile Hunter and ask him what he's all about.
There's a case to be made that you could just go with the whole Ginyu Force because they are a good laugh.
If you're going to the pub with an Australian, that's going to be an all-day affair. Chase is going to be there for like 12 hours just sinking can after can of Castlemaine 4X.
Aye. Calling him tinnies and fucking drinking you under the table.
Number four, I want to keep it really in view. I want to keep it, bring somebody that looks like my hero. Probably had the biggest effect in my life ever, and that's Sonic the Hedgehog. And there's a wee guy called Poir, who kind of looks like Sonic a wee bit.
He's a wee shapeshifter, hang. It's got an annoying as fuck voice.
He's good. I don't really pay much attention to his characterisation. I just like looking at him.
Aye.
He's got that kind of... You know how we talk about like the two different types of Sonic? You've got a Sega Sonic and then you've got the American Sonic.
Aye.
Well, he's more like a Japanese Sega Sonic thing. And I quite enjoy that still. It's like Sonic without all the westernised attitude and all that.
He just floats about. He doesn't really do him any harm.
Aye. I do like him. I do enjoy him. Number three, you've got to go Mr. Popo. Reason being is, Mr. Popo pops up. He's got quite a distinct kind of style. And I think he's got good crack. He's always like dead optimistic, I find, as well. And I would just enjoy bringing him because I think he'd be a good laugh. He doesn't look... He's not got the kind of muscular style of the others, and he's not got like the sharper features and all that like the other characters.
He's never drawn angry. He's always quite nice in that. But what I would point out about Mr. Popo is that he's possibly drawn a wee bit racist. It's that Jinx for Pokemon thing.
I get that, but I quite like thinking less about his ethnicity and more like he's not all there. Like he's not been fully drawn. So they've had an idea about Mr. Popo, a fat sultan, but they've not, like, they've kind of left it open to interpretation, so you fill in the gaps. I like his personality. He's like a big oaf, and I do like him. He's a very softly spoken gentleman.
He's a gentle giant.
Aye, I like him. I just wish they finished him. Because they've left him unfinished. Number two, I'm going to go for Beak Cell.
Yes.
So Beak Cell. Beak Cell is Cell before he becomes semi-perfect. He's just Cell's base version. If you think about it, like, now you've got like Pokemon, so you've got Charmander, then you've got the Charmeleon, and then you've got, then you've got Charizard. Well, Beak Cell is like the base version of that. He's like the Charmander. And I like him because he's got this wee kind of Beak King. And when you watch a cartoon, I don't know about yours, but they can become dead samey. This is why I enjoy Hey Arnold. All their heads are all different shapes. That's why I enjoy Doug. They're all different colours and all that, and kind of interesting. I like how, like, instead of just your standard moof that moves up and down in Dragon Ball Z, they went to the effort of giving him a beak.
He looks like a giant insect, and then when you get to like his most powerful transformation or whatever, just looks like an anime guy. He looks like any other guy in it. But the old beak version is definitely like the most interesting design of Cell. But also, I don't know how much good crack he'd be at the pub. He just kicks about and drinks cunts with his tail.
I mean, at least in his earlier form, his ego is not quite as massive as it ends up as.
That is also true.
You might still get a decent amount of chatter.
This is true. Piccolo is kind of easy one, right? I don't know, I'll leave him for you.
No, Andy, no. We've both got to have Piccolo. It's we both love him, so take him. I'm going to have him as well.
I'm a fucking reject of the highest order, right? In the sense of I'm a pure nerd, right? And I'm not ashamed to admit it. I get this mad thing, right, when I used to watch Teletext, that I pure enjoy the colours green and purple together. I had a Lecoq Sportif button-up trackie, right, in about 1998, and it was purple and green, and I fucking loved it. I don't know what it is, I'm a fucking weirdo, right?
Andy, this is a spectrum disorder, Hank. Do you realise this?
Exactly, it is. But I'm proud of it, and I'm proud that Piccolo kind of embodies that for me, a bit like Cell does as well. But Piccolo is better than Cell for me because his colours are popping, man.
Aye.
He's pure, like, when he's on screen, he's green, man, he's fucking doing it, he's all present. He's the kind of presence that sits in the back and listens to everything that's growing in the room. And then once the conversation's done, everybody in the room will then look at him and look for his opinion. Like, he's like the manager.
He's wise. This is why they keep him about. Every cunt becomes stronger than him, but they always still say, oh, we better take Piccolo along, because he uses a loaf. He's a clever one.
Aye, exactly. He's the guy you want here when it all falls apart. See if you're all partying for days or whatever. He's the one you want there to go, right, wee man, that's you. You fucking, you've had enough, got up the road. But again, I think he'd be good company with Sale, because having Sale kind of look the same, and you could wind them up by taking them with Rangers boozers and that, and just seeing the reaction, because they're pure bright green. And it would also be funny to watch Sale like, drinking his urn and all that, like he does in the show. Sale's got a thing where he can drink people with his tail.
A lot of Capri Sun, aren't they? They just turn into this kind of... It's like all your bones come out when he drinks you.
I just kind of like... kind of, what do you call it? A fly that spews on him. Like that. And Piccolo and Stella, I think, genuinely have real hate for each other. They're very similar.
Well, they wouldn't be good to invite the two of them out at the same time then, probably.
Well, that's it. But sometimes you've got to just got to man up and date for the team, you know? Go out and fucking... Just, you don't like each other, but you're part of the same thing. You don't like each other in the context of this thing that only applies to you. So you've got to go and go on it. And I'd like to see you two of them just pick each other all night. Maybe we'll get a square go to end it up with back roads or something.
Aye.
I'd quite like that. But there you go, man. That's my five. I'll go with them. I've got Mare. I wish I could take Mare, but I'm restricted. So, aye.
Mick, you want to go next?
Aye, sure. So, there was a day a couple of years ago when I was in the pub called Linen in Shotlands, and a lassie at the bar said to me, "Here, by the way, talk to that other guy over at the bar there and ask him what's in his pocket." I said, "What?" I went over and I said, "Excuse me, what has he got in your pocket?" And he opened up his jacket, and there was a wee flying squirrel that he had brought to the pub with him, and I thought this was the best thing ever. So, a good trip to the pub would involve a mascot character. And that mascot character for me is Slime for Dragon Quest.
Ah, yes. Nice. Did you see, Mick, did I hear you right there? This guy brought a flying squirrel to him.
A flying squirrel, yeah. Dead serious. Yeah, he just fucking sitting, drinking for a wee bottle of milk. It was amazing.
Is this like a guy who was walking about with a pigeon in his jacket?
It's a bit more hygienic than a pigeon and more novel. A pigeon might just come from outside. But if you had a wee slime at the pub with you, man, how adorable would that be? How much fucking... What a conversation starter that would be, just a wee slime kind of hopping about, a wee level one enemy.
So they're like bats, aren't they? Like, same thing?
Nah, they are not. Like, they're never an inconvenience. Like, you find them in, like, the starting area of Dragon Quest games, and you can always just biff them out of game in one hit. Bats get you poison status effects, they're annoying as fuck, they're all over caves and that. Like, they're no... I've got stuff in my notes about slime later, but just in terms of... The character designs for Akira Toriyama are so good, and on top of it all, Slime might just be the epitome. It's something about it is just the best.
The most basic fucking drawing possible, but it's so iconic, and it's kind of stood the test of time over years and years.
I know who you're talking about. It's that kind of blob thing.
Aye.
I like it.
It's a teardrop shape, and it's got a stupid smile.
Remember them things you used to get like in the 90s? They were kind of like, what do you call them, pogo sticks, but you sat on them. Space Hoppers.
Okay, yeah. You won me back there. I was like, pogo stick, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, I dig it. A wee bit like Mr. Hoppy.
Aye.
My number two is a character. This is kind of just because I like the design of him partially, but it's the main character of a short, kind of one-off anime series that Akira Toriyama wrote in 2000 called Sandland, and the main character of that is a wee guy called Beelzebub, who's a little pinkish, kind of wee demon-looking guy, kind of quite red, spiky hair that sort of, kind of like Bart Simpson, you don't really know where his hair ends and his face begins. Picked him because he looks cool, he looks like a kind of cheeky wee chappy, but also, canonically, he's Beelzebub, the demon, he's the son of Lucifer. I'd like to ask him some stories about hell and demons and if he meant Dante Alighieri and all that. Just a good bit of demon chat.
I've looked at a picture of him here. I like the goggles on the head, that steampunk kind of design.
Yeah, the manga is about like them on a, him and a few pals on a kind of road trip. They have this tank go through the desert doing kind of Mad Max-esque stuff. Akira Toriyama said he wrote the first couple of issues and then he realised that he didn't know how to draw tanks and he got quite annoyed at himself but had to finish it, so respect to him for that. It's also been adapted into a game that came out this year actually, came out like this week, action RPG, so a gaming connection there as well. The next character I've got, now I've never watched Dragon Ball Super, But I heard on the grapevine that in Dragon Ball Super, there's female Saiyans in it for the first time. And I've picked one of these characters, a lassie called Kale. Hope it's pronounced Kale, because they're all named after vegetables.
Aye.
So I just think that if you're going to the pub in a kind of dodgy part of town and you're maybe getting some unwanted attention, the idea of having a lassie there that as she gets more and more angry, gets increasingly more buff and intimidating, I think would be a viable asset to have at the pub with you.
Good to just turn her loose in one of the fucking sleazy as fuck nightclubs, Sugar Cube or something like that, and just guys try to touch her ass, and then she's like punching holes through their head.
Exactly. Cool. Four is, I couldn't really pick MDL for Chrono Trigger. It's Frog.
Aye.
Ah, oh, he's good.
Frog, the most fucking noble, kind-hearted guy. I feel like he's the sort of guy at the pub where he's maybe starts off as a wee bit reserved, a wee bit introspective, but get a few pints in and we'll be the life and soul of the party.
He's been through it all himself. That's the thing. Frog's had his ups and downs, you know what I mean? So he's very world-wise and he's going to give you good advice.
Probably like one of the folk that you used to talk to in the park lane.
I mean, I was thinking about your day with your Davy there. I think he'd be a bit like a Frog for Chrono Trigger.
And my final choice is, this is maybe slightly cheating a wee bit, but there's been a character that props up in loads of different things that Akira Toriyama has made. Games, anime, manga. And this is a little robot with a gas mask. I think it's called Robo Toriyama or Toribot. Aye. And this is basically a self-insert. If he wants to talk about himself, this is the kind of avatar of himself. So in a tribute to the late Akira Toriyama, if you who better to ask at the pub than literally Akira Toriyama himself, talk to him a bit about the creative process and thank him for all the joy he brought us.
Torybot is always smoking fags and reading porn magazines as well. He's quite a funny wee drawing.
True to life.
No, good list. And you got the man himself and got to be up there. Now, I'm going back to a five-person Dragon Ball roster here. I'll just blow through these. My number one, I've got Bulma, who is... She's been in it from the beginning. She's like Goku's pal. She goes looking for the Dragon Balls with him, eventually becomes Vegeta's wife. She is canonically, I think, the smartest person on Earth.
Yep.
But she's also just, like, down to Earth and a good laugh and that. Like, she likes playing bingo. So it would be like going for a pint with your favourite auntie if your favourite auntie could also, like, build mechs and time machines and stuff. So
she's always getting wee drunks with her and he always looks raging, doesn't he? Like, as if he's fucking throwing out every cunt. That's because he's got a street of Vegeta, isn't he? Vegeta has his feather and...
Aye. Well, I've got a hot take about Vegeta. I can maybe get on to at the end of the list here as well.
Aye.
My next pick is also for Dragon Ball Super slash like the newer films. I've got Lord Beerus the Destroyer, who is, he's just got quite a cool design. He's got a cool voice in that. He's like an Egyptian god. He's this mad cat thing. Goku fights him in Battle of the Gods. He is a god of destruction, and the thing that stops him for destroying planet Earth is that he thinks that the Scran's pretty good. Like, he's about to destroy the planet, and then people let him try, like, sushi and pizza and that, and he's like, well, hold on a minute, I'm going to need to keep getting this stuff.
Aye. He's a cool design. He's like one of the Sphinx cats, you know, the hairless cats.
Aye. Again, Akira Toriyama has, it's the second time he's had to do a new character for Dragon Ball, and he's just drew his cat. in the original Dragon Ball, there's a character called Korin, who was also Akira Toriyama's owl cat. But yeah, given that he goes after his nut for, like, Earth things, I'd like to see how he reacts to, like, scampi fries and, like, a pint of Guinness and that. He'd be like, how good is this?
Or scratchings.
Aye.
Is Beerus, like, the most, kind of, strongest fucking thing in the whole universe? Like,
I mean, every time they introduce a new Dragon Ball villain, it's the strongest thing in the entire universe. He's the strongest thing in the universe until the next guy comes along.
Goku's like in training because he wants to beat him in a fight, basically, and probably is going to at some point, you would think, but aye.
You pointed out that he's got like a load of siblings that are also gods that are also named after drinks. Like, there's a fucking rum one and a gin one and a vodka
aye.
One.
He's got a brother called Champa who's like Beerus but just a bit chubbier, but he's got a kind of crap personality from what I've been watching it. You'd rather hang about with Beerus. My next guy is King Kai, who is this chubby blue alien thing. He trains Goku in the program after Goku dies for the first time. and he lives on a tiny planet with a monkey and a talking cricket, and he's just a fucking mad, eccentric big guy that loves jokes. He's my kind of guy.
Ah, he's good. He's good, Tim.
I like how he wears those glasses like Morpheus.
Ah, he's got good shades. He wears this weird kind of robe thing and like a wee hat. Again, just they've all got good designs.
He's never got any good news, that guy. Dude. So always, you only see him when like there's bad shit happening.
Goku kind of does him a bad turn.
He's a bit like Hugh Edwards, man.
During the Cell fight, because he transports Cell to his wee planet and blows him up. So he also kills King Kai. But then he just reappears with a halo because death doesn't really seem to matter that much in Dragon Ball.
Nah, you just go to Snake Way, don't you?
That's it. Snake Way and then all the way back. I've also got Android 16, who is also for the Cell bit. He's a big robot, but he loves like nature and small animals and shit, and he's always getting like inspirational speeches about protecting nature and stuff. I could imagine him sitting with a pint of heavy and just being pretty good company.
He's the most kind of 1980s looking guy of all Dragon Ball Z characters with that hair, though.
I get Johnny Rotten vibes.
I think a lot of the time they draw based on actors and famous movie properties and stuff, and he definitely looks a bit like the Terminator, except with like a red mohawk. He's definitely got Arnie vibes.
Aye.
And then for my last guy, Andy, you've gone for him, I've gone for him. It's Piccolo. He's the best guy in Dragon Ball as far as I'm concerned. Love his whole aesthetic. I love his attitude. We know Goku's a bad dad, and Piccolo picks up the slack where he's been slacking off. He's just an all-round top geezer.
Piccolo's stepdad. He's his dad that stepped up.
It's never kind of made out that way that he's a bad dad in it. In fact, it really exposes a lot about Japanese culture and what's celebrated. Like, I think at the start, does Piccolo not take Gohan like, to a world and just leave him there to fucking fend for himself?
It's still Earth. They fight Raditz, who's like Goku's brother and that. Goku dies, and then the other ones are like, right, we've got a year to train before his backup arrives. And then Piccolo just takes this toddler, Gohan, and says, I'm going to fucking train him up. So he takes him to the wilderness, like, gives him a sword, and then is like, this'll toughen him up. But then they become best.
I went to uni with a guy who had done like a kind of transfer thing with students in Japan, and he basically lived in Japan for, I don't know, a month or two. And he said, aye, he saw the dad of the family like once, because he spent like the entire time just at work. And you would never fucking see the guy. So yeah, in terms of that Japanese culture, then that's pretty standard parenting for Goku, I think.
In an original draft on my list, I had Krillin, but I had to bump him out because Krillin becomes a polis.
Oh no.
Nah, it's not it. Mm. And another one that I had that I bumped off was Vegeta, which I think Vegeta is very good telly, but here's my hot take. I think Vegeta is very Protestant coded, and I think Goku is very Catholic coded.
Mm.
Goku is essentially like a feckless, lazy, big Catholic da. Like, he's always carrying on in that, and like his equivalent of disappearing on a piss for a week is like, oh, I'm going to go and train on King Kai's planet or whatever, but he may as well be at the pub. Whereas Vegeta's got this fucking supremacy in him, he's got a superiority complex, he's always talking about like royal blood and that. He hates Goku more than anything in the world. Goku doesn't really mind him, but he fucking hates Goku, man.
He has got this kind of staunch work ethic as well.
Yeah, so as much as I like Vegeta, I wouldn't really probably get on with him too well, and I do believe that Goku is a Catholic and Vegeta is a Protestant.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, he's got like this, I don't think he's a happy guy, Vegeta. I think there's a lot to be said for the guy. I think he's got a good heart deep down, right? But I think whether it's like he's the fact that he's got male pattern baldness, or the fact that the other side's stronger than him, I think he's got like a pure inferiority complex, like wee man syndrome.
He's not got that internal locus of evaluation. Like, he feels like if he gets, you know, stronger, if he defeats Goku, then he's going to reach happiness, but he doesn't really realise that happiness is within himself.
Aye.
Aye, the only true freedom is freedom for your heart's desires. And I don't think Vegeta embodies that at all. He just wants to get one up on people that perhaps are closer to happiness than he'll ever be.
Well said, Andy. Right, that gets our intro bump out of the way. Will we get into your games for the episode? Mick, you're going to start us off, and you're going to play a Dragon Ball one, in actual fact, Dragon Ball Z Budokai 3. What drew you to this one, and how did you get on with it?
I knew that there was a ton of Dragon Ball Z fighting games. The vast majority of adaptations of Dragon Ball Z are fighting games, because the series is so much about fighting. It's kind of a natural choice. I've heard good things about this one. This one is kind of comes very highly rated. And yeah, our resident sort of Dragon Ball expert here, Aero, a Dragon Ball game expert at least, recommended Dragon Ball Z Tenkaichi 3. So Dragon Ball fighting games there's been various approaches taken over the years in terms of how to capture the experience of watching one of these fights in Dragon Ball translate into a fighting game. You get some that are just kind of straight up, like Street Fighter 2-esque sort of beat-em-ups. You get other ones which try and add some of the drama and the kind of high-flying elements and the kind of, you know, zooming through the air and use of space and all that stuff. And I think this one really manages to kind of bridge the gap between both of these. It's like a good, complex, sort of rewarding fighting game, but also everything about it just screams Dragon Ball at you. You can tell it's maybe a lot of love and a lot of respect for the series and like an understanding of what people actually like about Dragon Ball and what makes these fights sort of dynamic and enjoyable to watch. How this game works is, I thought it was going to be a kind of traditional sort of 2D fighter. And the way that I approach these games, because I'm not very good at them, is I jump in and I download a button bashing and I kind of try and smash my way to the finish. And you quickly realise that this doesn't work in this game at all. But it really punishes you for doing that, and you won't get past like the first couple of fights if you're mashing punch and kick.
Aye.
Yeah, there's a kind of load of like overlapping systems in this game which kind of add up to these kind of big, massive Dragon Ball fights. So as well as your health bar, your normal health bar that you've got a chi meter, which is your kind of power level. You've got higher chi, you do more damage. If you get lower, you do less damage.
Aye.
And you gain chi by punching and kicking, just your standard kind of fighting game moves. And also you can do that thing that you always see last about 20 episodes.
Aye.
Dragon Ball characters, they're holding up, they're kind of tensing up, they're flexing their muscles. There's a big aura around them and they're charging up their energy.
You've got to have charging up in a Dragon Ball fighting game, that
And that's the first sign I've sort of seen where I was like, yeah, this is really trying to capture the experience of watching the anime, because plenty of times in a fight where just two of you are on opposite ends of the screen going ha and fucking stones or wee bits of gravels flying up and stuff like that while you're charging your energy bars. But obviously that leaves you exposed to attack when you're doing that, so you kind of do it all the time. I like to start off a fight just before you can allow to do any actual damage. I just kind of fly right back, start charging up my energy.
See, Dragon Ball Z game, 2D fighters. You know how you mentioned you've got Street Fighter 2, Mortal Kombat, Guilty Gear, Marvel vs. Capcom, where it's just two guys fighting each other, and that's it. Well, and one thing I've noticed about Dragon Ball games, I don't know if you agree, is that they've got a sort of kind of other element to them that's not completely real time. Kinda like at times I don't feel like I'm playing the game in real time. Like I've got to do something that's kind of completely different for the mindset you would use when playing a.
There are very different systems at work in different Dragon Ball fighting games. Like the Tenkaichi ones are like this kind of almost over the shoulder where you're flying about and shooting energy blasts at each other. This in Budokai 3 has your big flashy energy attacks and stuff, but it's closer to a stand-up fighting game maybe than some of the other ones, I think.
This is what I liked about this. It's kind of got a bit of both. You can kind of approach it in some ways like a Street Fighter and stuff. You know, there's kind of combos, there's projectiles, there's a button that fires off projectiles, or you can do your special moves, Kamehameha, or some sort of variation on that. One thing that's quite cool as well is the sort of blocking and dodging system in this. So rather than just kind of one button to block punches and kicks, you can kind of hold in, block, and that drains your chi a wee bit, but it reduces some of the damage with the kicks and punches. But if you tap it like in time, you do that thing as well that you see in Dragon Ball where like they're so fast, they're like dodging a punch and then dodging a kick, like just flurries of punches and kicks coming at them, and they're just kind of moving their body so fast that they're dodging away from it. There's one really cool move as well you can do where you time your dodge exactly right and press the right button, you teleport behind them, and then that opens them up and you can attack them from behind.
That's always the coolest shit in the cartoon, where they walk behind them, then the other person goes, huh? Like they look on shock, and then buff, they get smashed.
Aye. So there's a kind of push and pull with these, your basic kind of blocking and attacking, where your kind of cheese going up and down, and then you can go through various forms as well. So you start off with Kaioken, which is kind of like your super powered form. That's, using Goku as an example, that's this kind of super powered form before the kind of intermediate stage before Super Saiyan. And then you can kind of use another couple of bars of energy to kind of bump up to Super Saiyan 1 and presumably 2 and 3 and possibly even 4, but I didn't actually get that far in the story mode. I've got the first Super Saiyan mode for Goku anyway.
The cover of this one has Super Saiyan 4 Goku on it, I think. That's for Dragon Ball GT, which is like a spin-off thing. I don't know how well, like, I don't know how much fans like that now, given that, like, Super's kind of doing, like, an alternative retelling of what the years after Dragon Ball Z are meant to be, but it's interesting. I remember back in the day, people used to quite like the Super Saiyan 4 Goku, that weird big fucking fur creature that he is.
Aye, 4's the one where he's got like kind of dark hair, but it's spiky. And in the way he's got the tail back again.
Aye.
I was only kind of like tangentially aware of Dragon Ball Z, and I like the idea of having different power levels and stuff. So the fact that there was a TV series where he reached an even higher power level, I thought, oh, that must be pretty cool. But yeah, apparently people don't like it very much.
Nah.
This kind of takes me to the story mode of this game, which is what you'll spend most of your time playing. So Mick was saying before we started this chat that he quite likes in this era of fighting games where they would try and add a wee bit of longevity to your standards of arcade gameplay by adding maybe like some sort of campaign mode, RPG mode type of thing, you would say. A lot of the times it was just kind of tacked on, really. There wasn't a whole lot of thought to it. What's the one in Soul Blade is a good example of this.
Edgemaster mode.
Edgemaster mode's pretty cool.
Aye.
You'd set other similar things at the time.
All the PS2/GameCube/Xbox Mortal Kombat games had adventure game modes in them where you could run about and talk to cunts and explore Outworld and that. And some of them were pretty shite, but I've just got a hang in my head where I liked it. I liked running about in Mortal Kombat. So the fact that this let you fly about the world like a Dragon Ball character and look for wee secrets in that, rather than just always... Because a lot of them will just be like Tekken, where you'll have like 10 fights that you just have to get through and then you complete a game. So I like that wee extra bit of having something to explore. A wee bit more to do and a bit more to look at.
I think they realised for like the Sega Saturn, when they had a lot of fighting games that were just straight up ports of the arcade, that kind of as a single player experience it's a wee bit lacking. And I'm such a fucking nerd for RPGs that if you have like just the slightest wee RPG element or something, that'll keep me hooked. It'll keep me playing anything, for like a racing game, or like a beat 'em up or whatever. If you can level up a stat, then you know you've got me.
But there's a fair bit in this, isn't there, different stats you can increase and like customizable move sets as well. Like you can gay guys the Kamehameha that don't use it in the program and that if you like find the capsule for it or whatever.
Yeah, equip different abilities and that's how you kind of progress through the different Super Saiyan forms and stuff. So yeah, as Mick was saying, these are kind of fights that follow the plot of Dragon Ball Z, the TV series. Strung together by bits where you've got a kind of over-the-shoulder view of your character flying from place to place. There's a wee world map and you're usually just going from one fight to the next, but there's wee secrets you can find as well and wee extra. You can maybe speak to King Kai and he'll give you a wee capsule, give you a special move or something. You find the Dragon Balls, not entirely sure what they do, presumably you get something good if you get all of them.
You get a wish and I think it gives you like 3 things to choose between, and you know you can choose to wish for more health or a couple of level ups or a new power or something like that. It's usually something a wee bit better than the standard reward you would get for just finding somebody. But yeah, it is just another stat boosty type thing.
Yeah, I can imagine it was going to be something like that. So this follows the plot of the TV series very closely. In some ways, that's quite cool. It adds a kind of wee bit to it because if you're in a fight, and in the TV series, that was the first time that Goku used, like, the Spirit Bomb, for example. if you use that in the fight, then you get extra XP. So you're literally like rewarded for saying what happened in the TV show. This is a good wee bonus for the fans. Where this kind of doesn't work for me is that I started off playing as Tien, who is a pretty minor character in the TV series, all things considered. I just thought, why go Goku, man? Just go someone else, try out someone else. What you find is that you do the first couple of fights and that, and then you just get a cutscene saying, and then Goku fought Frieza, and then Goku fought Cell, and Tien's just like nodding anything until he's actually called for in the TV show. So I'm like, I'm missing, like, you know, most of the fucking action here playing as this wee side character.
You've got a lot of these D-listers who, like, will be in the background for it and then maybe get to fight a henchman at some point, but are basically no involved in the plot.
And if you're playing the game as him, you will fight henchmen. Like, you unlock, there's loads of characters to unlock, hundreds of characters to unlock, but if you play through the campaign as him, you're unlocking henchmen. Whereas if you play through as Goku, you know, within the first couple of fights, you've got Vegeta, you know, stuff like that. We start off really where the series starts out, where he's got all his pals, play Dragon Ball, which, as I imagine, all become pretty much obsolete by the time the series goes on, because he gets, like, fucking superpowered and he's just completely having these sane pals are like completely outranking always the lowly humans.
Piccolo keeps up the pace probably run about till after Cell, and then he's just kind of one of the weaklings. But I don't know how you feel about this, Andy, actually, but in one of the newer films they've gave Piccolo a new form which puts him on par with the Saiyans again, but it turns him orange. He's called Orange Piccolo.
Do you know what? I'm not having it. I'm not. I mean, the whole point of the fucking Namex is greenness, right down to their sky, just their heads pure green. You start messing about with oranges and kind of rustic colours.
He is still green. It's just a fight power up. It's like the, it's like blonde hair for the Super Saiyans. It's just a visual cue to say, look, Piccolo looks a wee bit different. This means he's in a stronger form now.
I don't know how you get from green to orange. You know what I mean?
Is it yellow? I don't know. I'm not much for art, but
yeah, either you can't be green and then turn orange, and especially in the west of Scotland, isn't it? So that's just not flying for me. Nah, I'm not having it.
Well, I mean, Neil McCann.
Maybe he's a wee fanny, man. That's good player. Good player. Good fucking right left foot.
Anyway.
The thing you were saying, Andy, about Dragon Ball Z games, that there's a kind of non-linear element about them, the fights. There is something like that. There's bits where the control gets taken away from you during the fights. Like, there was a cool bit just in one stage where I punched, I think, Piccolo through a mountain, and he ends up at the other side of the mountain, and there's like a Triceratops. And then he starts fighting the Triceratops, and he takes some damage for that. First time that happened, that was quite cool. Then there is this whole system where you get a kind of a grapple together, and it becomes like a QTE thing, and you're asked to press one button, the other player is asked to press another button, and it does a kind of rock, paper, scissors thing. And then they start kind of throwing punches at each other and doing kind of cool cinematic stuff, flying about, attacking each other. It all looks very cool, but for me, I just got a bit sick of it. I thought it took too long. I was never 100% sure how to what beat what. It's like when I mean, you're playing a Final Fantasy or something and you see like a summon animation, the first time it happens, it's great. After that, you're like, you know, kind of, how do I skip this?
Does this have you shoot an energy beam and your opponent shoots an energy beam? And when the beams collide, it becomes a button mashing contest. Dragon Ball Z games, I love that.
It does that, and I did like that, actually. That didn't get old. You know, something about that, the fact that you're fucking fighting for your life, fucking battering the buttons.
It can be tense if you're on low health, and then you're just, like hammering away at it.
There's a couple of fights I ended up winning with that, and that was pretty satisfying. And I bet as well, in two-player, that's the magic.
Does this game have more of the, like, Japanese influence and American influence? You know how, like, the original Dragon Ball Z with Japanese kind of sequences and the soundtrack made it sound like it was something for the 70s and 80s and all that, but the American one kind of updated it with Willie Faulkner's soundtrack.
The soundtrack is all kind of, I guess, sort of 80s-ish synth rock, which is fine. That kind of works quite well. I have the feeling that that's fairly similar to what you get for the Japanese series.
Aye.
Presentation all together, it's good. The music's kind of pumping. There's a kind of cel-shaded look about it, which, you know, started coming into things in the PS2 era, where you've got these kind of bold black outlines and black shading, makes it look kind of like the cartoon. We haven't quite perfected it yet. I think this just gets better and better as things go on. I know that Dragon Ball Z Fighter Z one for like the PS3 or 4, was it? That looks amazing.
That was the one, I think, that fighting game fans got into, like, because for a while you had fighting games and you had Dragon Ball Z games. Like, the likes of Budokai 3 is fun, but fighting game fans would kind of sneer at it. Whereas I think Fighter Z or whatever it's called, I think that was at EVO. Is that the big fighting game tournament?
Yeah.
I think that was the first time a Dragon Ball game was at that.
Aye. So it feels like they're maybe on a journey to kind of reach like that destination. But for this one, I think, you know, if you're a fighting game fan, it's not necessarily got all the kind of depth that you would want for like one of these kind of high level fighting games. Not those are like frame perfect cancels and reversals and things like that, but there is definitely a lot of depth there, and it kind of kept me interested as well. The fact that you're kind of learning different combos and dodges and managing your energy levels and stuff like that. There's depth there, and it's a fun one, and I think two player would be good crack as well.
The PS2 one that is the fan favourite is because you've got Budokai 1, 2 and 3, and then you've got Budokai Tenkaichi 1, 2 and 3, and Budokai Tenkaichi 3 is the one that everybody goes after nut for. That's the behind the back, flying about, shooting energy beams more than traditional fighter. But the reason people like that is because it's got like fucking 200 playable characters in it. Like, if there's a wee guy who's only been in like one episode, you know, you can play as like Frieza Soldier B and things like that, which is why people like that one so much. But I always had a wee soft spot for that because Aaron used to play all these. It was the Snidey adventure game mode in this that always made me think, ah, this is the one. I like this one.
Aye, there was something about this that appealed to me. I wasn't really as interested in playing something that was more like a shooter. I felt like, I don't know, I felt like a fighter was the one to go for.
Aye.
I was pleasantly surprised that I enjoyed it, and, you know, you don't need to be a massive Dragon Ball Heed to enjoy this one. In fact, I would say if you're a huge Dragon Ball Heed, if you're a Tien Heed or a Yamcha Heed, you may be a bit disappointed. But otherwise, it's a recommendation for me, man. Check it out.
There we go.
Which one?
We're going to give you a Dragon Ball break now. I am going to look at, as well as the Dragon Ball series, obviously Akira Toriyama did Chrono Trigger, but we've covered Chrono Trigger. We can't do Chrono Trigger again. The other famous series, as Mick alluded to with his pub picks, is Dragon Quest. So for my pick for the Akira Toriyama special, I've come in with Dragon Quest 6. I'm going to put a wee caveat at the start here and say that I haven't played this for a couple of weeks. I got about 30 hours in, but then I've just been busy with other shit, and when I lose focus with an RPG and then I try and dive back into it, I just can't pick up where I left off.
Aye, we've all been there.
I just had to leave my party vaguely near the end of the game with no closure. For this one, I was tempted to do Dragon Quest 8, because that's a Dragon Quest game that I've like played. That was a PS2 one, and for my money, it's maybe the best looking game on the PS2. But I thought I'd go blind and I'd play one in the series that I haven't touched before. And I think to frame this around Akira Toriyama again, just sort of briefly, is one of his greatest achievements is probably character design. Like, Andy, you were talking about how much you like the design of Piccolo there. I just think whenever he designs something, he just has this clean, perfect fucking, like, they all look effortlessly iconic. You've got Goku, you've got a frog for Chrono Trigger, slime for Dragon Quest. You can picture all these things in your head.
There's a science to drawing a comic book character, isn't there?
If you can recognise it for a silhouette, aye, it's a good character. And for a lot of his, you can. Although a lot of the Dragon Quest characters and Dragon Ball characters are just spiky-haired anime guy. But, you know, he was kind of first to do that as well, so you've got to fucking gear up.
I think it took me a wee while to kind of appreciate Akira Toriyama's character design. As you say, Dragon Ball Z was the first exposure I had to it, where it was a load of spiky-haired anime dudes. Especially, like, the longer the series went on, you feel like he's kind of how many variations on Spike Haired Anime Dude can you get? But it's kind of only from realizing like how much work you've done for things like Dragon Quest and Chrono Trigger, like you realize he's actually created a lot of like really iconic folk and inspirational. Like you feel that it's a ripoff because other folk have ripped him off so much.
Aye. I mean, everything, I think we were talking about it before, but everything for Sonic the Hedgehog to Final Fantasy VII was at a debt.
Aye.
And, you know, a lot of these dudes kind of have the same faces. Like the wee guy in Dragon Quest VI looks like a Gotenks out of Dragon Ball. You know, when Trunks and Goten join together and they become a wee menace called Gotenks. You're a blue hair Gotenks in this. But he's just got this wee earring and he's got a wee sort of funny vest tunic hang on. It looks class. I love the character designs in this and the enemy designs particularly, but I think they're a long-running thing in Dragon Quest where you never really get bored with the random battles because you're always fighting some funny-looking wee thing.
I watched a couple of wee clips of it just kind of speedrunning through YouTube, and yeah, you're fighting some adorable monsters. That kind of... what's that thing? The Secret of Mana in that? It's like you almost regret killing them.
Because they're charming as fuck.
Aye.
They've got good wee animations as well. Well, the version I played is actually a remake for the Nintendo DS. The original Dragon Quest VI was a Japan-only SNES game, but they remade a load of the old Dragon Quest games for the DS, and a lot of the time that was the first time it came out in the West. I've got to admit, I'm going to probably be comparing to Final Fantasy quite a bit in this, because it's my frame of reference. I actually like the style that these Dragon Quest remakes have gone for a lot more than I do the 3D Final Fantasy 3 and Final Fantasy 4 remakes. Like, I didn't really like the 3D thing they did with that. Whereas with this, you've got a graphical overhaul, but they keep things very cartoony and very close to the way the other thing was. Like, I think I was saying to you before we started recording, Mick, like, what Square Enix are doing now with things like Octopath Traveler, I think they've come back around to this way of thinking in some ways.
Aye.
But I think these Dragon Quest remakes are almost an early example of that. It's no pixel art, but it's kind of just an upgrade on the original artwork without losing the essence of it.
Yeah, even the Final Fantasy like pixel remasters, like they've done, I think, like 4 and 5 and stuff, they're a bit closer to what they used to look like, but there's something still not quite right about them for me. I feel like there's, whether it's the font or like weird mixing resolutions and stuff like that, it doesn't quite work. And Dragon Quest probably comes with more of a respect for like the earlier iterations of the series. That is a series that's kind of, over the years, is the underlying mechanics of it haven't really changed a whole lot. Like, they kind of invented the JRPG and then made some kind of small tweaks to it over the years, but fundamentally it kind of plays very much, you know, Dragon Quest VIII plays very much like Dragon Quest I, whereas if you compare Final Fantasy VIII to Final Fantasy I, it's a world of difference.
I played one of the new ones, the 11, the number 11 was on like Xbox Game Pass, I gave it a bash.
Aye.
And it's just exactly the same. Toon, dungeon, power up, gear up, toon, dungeon, power up, gear up.
But you know what? People come back to that in their droves. People like it. Sometimes you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes the wheel is fine. Add a couple of extra wee bits onto a wheel if you want. But if it works, fucking keep making it, man. People will come back to it. So Dragon Quest VI, it opens with quite an interesting wee trope that I've seen. Another RPG that I've seen it in is called Lufia, or Lufia on SNES. It's maybe in a couple of different wee things, but you switch this game on, you take control of a party who are seemingly on their way to fight the final boss. In this case, it's a demon called Murdoch. But when you get there, he reveals, you know, he's knew about this all along, and he turns the party into stone. Then you wake up in a wee village called Weaver's Peak, and you're unsure if this whole opening segment has been like a dream or no. I've put a side note here. I really like Weaver's Peak as a starting location because it gets fleshed out how the local economy works. The women are all weavers and the men are all carpenters, and they sell stuff at a neighbouring town that's got a big market. Not enough games tell you how the local economy works. The villagers just walk about and do nothing. You get your standard wee blue-haired anime dude, and you get sent off on a fetch quest to collect a MacGuffin in order to for the local village festival to go ahead. In the process, you fall through a hole in the world, And this introduces the game's big gimmick, where we have a real world and a dream world. In the dream world, you have got idealized versions of people and places from the real world. So everybody in the real world has a dream world equivalent, but your dream world version is always kind of living their best life. They're a better version of you, and they're living a better life. Like in a tune in the real world, for instance, you meet a depressed old man who just wants a ridey wife. He just keeps talking about how he wishes he had an attractive woman by his side. And then you go to the dream world, and inexplicably, there's a gorgeous woman next to this old man going, "I fucking love him, by the way." And you talk to him, and he's like, "This is amazing." Like,
I wasn't expecting this kind of psychology in Dragon Quest VI, I'm going to be honest. It's pretty interesting.
It's the most interesting part of the story, for sure. The first part of the game features very little of this switching between worlds. You date sometimes, but the first act is all about defeating this Murdaugh guy, who, of course, wasn't actually the big bad. He's just kind of the baddie for the first act. The second act of the game, where the bulk of the action actually takes place, involves you exploring the world, trying to find the real world version of the main character. Because, of course, you're playing as a dream world version. Because you're a brave hero, do you know what I mean? You fling yourself into danger, you can do spells, you can, you know, wield a sword and beat these bosses and that. So somewhere there is probably a real world version of you who's like a wee chump who isn't all this at all.
It's pretty interesting, I like that.
Yeah, your first party member is a big guy called Carver. He's a big muscly mohawk guy, very satisfying design again, and he's, you know, good fun to talk to in the game and that. He finds his own real-world counterpart, and then they two halves join, and then he suddenly gets all these new memories because you've had the dream world Carver with you, and then he goes, "Oh, yeah, in the real world, I am a carpenter who, like, daydreams all day about going on adventures." Hence why in the dream world, Carver's like, "Oh, I'll go on an adventure with you," like, joking to go on adventures. And then when you combine the two parts of them, you get this kind of, like, Uber Carver, a fully self-actualized dream world and real world one who gets, like, a big power buff as well. So the idea is you have to find the other half of your main character so that he can do this, and then you can presumably go on and defeat the big evil power at the end.
You find that a lot of RPGs are influenced by Dragon Quest in many ways, and it seems like Persona 3 has stolen quite a lot of its shtick from this one.
Well, you know, this is interesting. Zelda, A Link to the Past, had the dark world, obviously, but the dream world is something a wee bit different. It's not, and it's not necessarily malevolent, it's just another place where people live out their kind of fantasies, I guess. And I don't know if it's implied that when people in the real world are sleeping, they're in the dream world, but yeah, they don't really seem aware of the dream world.
Is there a bad side to this? Like, is there problems in the dream world?
No.
Are caused by this, or is it just heaven?
I mean, yes, there are problems in the dream world, but they are usually like, oh, a monster's on top of this. They're the same kind of shit that you deal with in the real world. It's just sometimes you'll flick over to a dream world and do a quest there, rather than it's all just quests in the real world. But no, there are no problems that just come from it being a dream world. It just is the dream world. There's no really a set order to do this game in either. Like, you explore the world map looking for your other half, and then you find a toon. Each toon will usually have its own unique wee problem, and then you'll usually do a dungeon or a boss fight to help out the people, and then that will also inadvertently help the overarching quest by giving you a plot-specific item, or maybe unlocking a boat so that you can travel to, like, different parts of the map or whatever. And it's just that, pretty much over and over again.
People come back to Dragon Quest because it's, like, a comfort, isn't it? It's something they grew up with, they like it, they don't want it changed. They want a JRPG as it was sort of meant to have been. I mean, you've got Persona, which is a JRPG, Yakuza, like a dragon, but they've added all sorts of bits on. Whereas even now, Dragon Quest is just a straight-in-your-face, formulaic JRPG.
I would say Persona's maybe an example. Since the second one, 3, 4 and 5 have kept the formula pretty much the same. Like, they've kept the turn-based gameplay and stuff. If I have to go have a go at any series for being completely fucking different now, it's Final Fantasy. They are unrecognisable.
I've not played them. Action games now, aren't they? They're just action games. It's like Devil May Cry.
And people like it, but for me, I think spiritually, the more I hear about Dragon Quest, the more I think, this is where I'm meant to be. This is... These are my people. I want to be with the game series that doesn't change that much.
As you're getting old.
Probably is, aye.
The Dragon Quest, it seems like even the kind of earlier iterations of it, they were bringing new things to the table. Like, JRPGs hadn't really been set in stone. Like, they kind of had a party system, and they had, like, a class system and stuff like that as well. An open world, non-linear stuff. Like, it wasn't always a series that you would call conservative.
No, and I think you would be doing it a disservice to say that, okay, it keeps the essence the same, right? And this, you've got a battle like any other Dragon Quest game. The enemy sprite will be ahead of you. Your characters will attack, use magic, buffs, whatever, special attacks. But they do add in extra wee tweaks at different points in the series. Some of the games will have quite different wee gameplay flavours to the others. Dragon Quest VI is a game that brought back a very popular feature for Dragon Quest III, which was a class system, or as it's known in Dragon Quest, the vocation system. This is a bit like Final Fantasy V. At a certain point in the story, you unlock this thing called the All Trades Abbey, and you can make any of your characters into a different job, a la Dungeons & Dragons. You can make somebody a warrior, you can make them a priest, you can make them a mage, and so on. The goal of this is to master certain vocations in order to unlock new ones. So, for instance, if you master the warrior and martial artist vocation, you unlock a gladiator one. If you master priest and martial artist, you unlock a paladin one, and so on. In order to facilitate this, the encounter rate in this game is actually quite high. Like, you have to fight a lot in order to get these job levels up. I have seen people complain about this, but I didn't really mind it. I find grinding in RPGs quite meditative.
Therapeutic.
Almost. I can sort of zone out and just enjoy it. But I bear in mind, when I'm praising the game, it does also have that. So if that's something that would day you're not in, I would say, to compare it to Final Fantasy again, it feels a wee bit less in-depth than the job system in Final Fantasy V. I think the jobs in V feel very distinct with their different abilities and what they can do in battle, whereas in Dragon Quest VI, they just change your stats a wee bit and you learn like a different spell every time you level up. But what the characters can do is mostly set in stone. Like, there's characters you're meant to make fighters and characters you're meant to make mages, and you can't really change that about too much. But it might be a good entry point to games with job systems. As we like to say on the podcast, a baby's first. To sum up, I really enjoyed this. I definitely would have finished it if sort of life hadn't got in the way. As we were saying, Dragon Quest, even right up to 11, which came out in fucking 2017, 2018, they stay the same in essence, do you know what I mean? And I find myself wishing that more games did. I've got a lot of respect for Dragon Quest, and if you're a JRPG fan, my recommendation to you is to look at, I think they're called the Xanthian Trilogy, which is Dragon Quest 4, 5, and 6, these DS remakes. They will cost you a fortune if you try to buy them on DS, and they're a pain in the arse to emulate, but you can actually get mobile versions of all three, and apparently they are just the exact same as the DS ones, and they play pretty good. A lot of people consider 5 to be the best Dragon Quest game ever made. 6 is alright. I enjoyed 6, but fans of the series kind of think it's maybe no one of the best ones. But yeah, I think if you're into JRPGs and you're looking for something a wee bit old school, look out the mobile version of Dragon Quest 4, 5 or 6, because they're great wee things, man. The wee remakes, they're just full of charm, and if you like those gameplay loops, you'll not be disappointed.
Nice. Sounds like a good chill time.
Maybe for your flight to Japan, actually. Maybe one worth looking at.
I need something very grindy, I think, for 14 hours ahead of me.
Are you going to go to the Wheater Street, man?
I don't know if I can make it to, was it Yokosuka? I think that's quite, maybe a bit off the beat track, but if I see anything, any reminders of Shemmy, I'll let you know for sure.
Go to the Wheater Street, get me something, get me just a lot of rock in that and just fucking worship.
Andy, you just need to go there yourself, make it your life's ambition.
I need to wait, what have I got? What age is he? It's 15 years yet? No, not at all. But it's 12 years. 12 years and I'll go to Yokosuka.
Right. Andy Mack, you are our final game of the episode. And you've got something a wee bit interesting for us. It's a Game Boy Advance game, as a resident Dragon Ball expert Aero explained to us. This is an American-made Dragon Ball game that was so good that the Japanese actually wanted it, and they translated it and they brought it out out there. Why don't you tell us what drew you to Legacy of Goku 2 and how you got on with it?
Aye, so, as I said, I'm familiar with Dragon Ball Z. Dragon Ball Z. Z or Z, what we're saying?
Z would be the correct way to pronounce it, but in the fucking cartoon and that, because the Americanization, they all just say Z, don't they?
So we'll just call it Dragon Ball Z, right, since we're, like, we're rebels, aren't we?
Why not?
Aye, fuck it. Aye, so, I'm a big Dragon Ball Z, Z, I like it. Game Boy fans.
I've never heard anybody call it Dragon Ball Z in my puff. And you're the only person for which this is up for debate.
Game Boy Advance, fucking magic. Marry the two together, and you're fucking interested, man. But I don't know what to expect. I'll be honest with you, right? Up until about 2 years ago, I didn't know really much about Dragon Ball Z, but I knew what it was. I'd seen episodes of it. I knew it, kind of, it was about two cunts talking for 10 episodes, with doing the odd move to each other, and fighting all the time, and not much animation going on, apart from his wee bursts of fighting and stuff. That was my understanding of it. But when I started watching it, I got all the lore. I started to get in all the characters, I started to get in all the worlds, what everything was, power-ups and all that, what the Dragon Balls were, the context of everything, and how different it was to American cartoons. And this wee game here sort of embodies everything that I enjoy about Dragon Ball Z, and handheld gaming for that matter. So aye, it's a top-down RPG game, action RPG game, a bit like Link to the Past. But where it differentiates from Link to the Past is its ability to maintain its identity as an RPG, but at the same time it delivers the RPG to you in wee bursts. So you'll be doing something 1 minute, like fetch quests. You've got to get about, for instance, in the early part of the game, you've got to get an autograph off somebody to pass through a certain part of the town. But to do that, you've got to do like maybe four other wee sub fetch quests.
Aye.
And it's just like doing this wee bit, doing that wee bit, and like dotting the T's and crossing the I's and getting a wee buzz when you go through. It's like a wee shot of adrenaline. And then you'll need to go and grind to get to the next bit. But I've got to say, right, you know how I've always got stuff against grinding that wee bit in turn-based games that happen too often?
Aye.
Random battles, you kind of see what's coming, and they're fucking relentless. Well, this game has got one of the funkiest, most entrancing and simple fighting systems I've ever played in a game. It's a wee fucking funny way of doing it. You know in Zelda, when you hit a baddie, it kind of bounces back and all that, and like you can swing things about, there's a wee field of impact you can have. Well, it's sort of like this.
There's an arc your sword goes in, isn't there?
Aye, but it's even more simple. It's just like a wee punch you do. But
aye,
it's based on timing. So, like, you have an enemy who's a similar level to you, or maybe even a higher level than you, and he'll have a rhythmic kind of attribute to his attack, and you've got to try and position yourself slightly to the left or the right of him or behind him, and you've got to find a different rhythm in order to kind of take control of the battle. I'm making it sound a lot more complex than it is.
You've got, like, energy blasts as well, haven't you? You can shoot wee ones, and then you can cycle along with the shoulder buttons, I think, and,
that's
like,
right,
do some of their more powerful attacks, like some of these beams and that
that's right
you see in the cartoon.
So you've got a punching attack, but you've also, as you say, got your energy beam attack. And I find, when I started the game, I thought, right, I better keep my energy beams for the bosses, because the way this game works is you will go through a sort of wee dungeon on the way to a final boss, just like an RPG. But by the time you get to the boss, your resources will be quite limited. Not so in this game. The boss is drop pings, so you can use your beam as much as you want, because you can just pick up mer beams as you go on.
Aye, it's like Mega Man, they drop energy when you kill them.
Aye, you get them inside wee rocks as well.
Aye.
It's a retelling of
the Cell Saga.
The Cell Saga. I thought, when I was thinking back to this, when the game started, you picked between characters and then you were just them for the game. No. But you kind of, you've got like four characters that you cycle between at will, is that right?
Aye, so there's wee parts of the level that are save points essentially, and there's quite a lot of them. When you go to a save point, you can change your character. So for instance, you start off as Gohan, start your Trunks, and Trunks says, look, Earth Frieza, you're too weak, wee man, fuck off. Gohan says, no way, man, I'm coming, my dad's fucking dead. And he goes, all right, you can come with me, and he punches him in the head and knocks him out. And then Gohan wakes up and goes, you wee bastard, you left without me. And it's sort of, that's where the story sort of comes from. So it's sort of that bit. See where, in the Frieza saga right at the end, where all the battle's done, Frieza comes back, and Trunks turns up and cuts him into wee pieces with just a blade after that fucking 10-year battle.
Aye.
Trunks just turns up and chops him up.
But that's how it shows you, like, how powerful is he, and like, what sort of fucked up shit is he going through to get to this when he was just a wee Wayne before?
Aye.
The kind of real start of the game is like you as Gohan as a Wayne.
Aye.
Then Trunks comes back, and then you find out that you've got to train, you know, for years to defeat Cell, who's coming later on. You unlock
the androids are coming in 3 years.
The androids,
Trunks appears and tells him the androids are going to show.
Aye, Trunks comes back and says, by the way, I've got some bad news for you. I think Frieza was bad, you've not seen any yet. There's androids coming, and they're going to be here in 3 years' time. Something to do with light speed or something, I don't know. But they're on their way, you're fucked, you better go and train. So Goku goes away to put yourself in a hyper fucking pressure chamber to go training. But he gets a heart disease, and Trunks managed, so that slows down his progress, but Trunks managed to stop his heart disease, and he starts training again for this big battle. But in the meantime, Gohan goes on his NBA adventure, essentially, aye.
Quite funny how most folk in the west of Scotland get heart disease because of, like, too much chips and beer. Like, Goku gets it for just being too strong.
For the last time, you start to get the exposition of who Trunks is, Vegeta's boy and all that. The rest of the crew all turn up, that guy with the fucking three eyes and all that, he's pretty good.
Future Trunks shows up and he's talking to Goku. He says, Goku, can I have a word? Goku says, aye. And then he kind of lets the cat out of the bag that Vegeta's his feather and Bulma's his maw. But the two of them haven't got together yet. So then Goku's fucking going over and slapping Bulma on the back and all that and going, oh, fucking, you're going to get a bun in the oven, aye? You got your eye on Vegeta there and stuff. Whereas Trunks, like, flailing his arms around going, no, like, you'll causality, like, I'll never be born.
It wasn't fooling me, I knew it was Vegeta. I see eyebrows and just the kind of grimace. I knew that was Vegeta, man. That was Vegeta's boy, and there's no fucking denying it. Obviously, she eventually let it get out of the bag that it was. But I'm glad Trunks managed to shake it off that wee streak, because it was kind of fucked, wasn't he? He's there. But anyways, it comes to a point where you go Gohan at the start, but then once you do that wee quest I was talking about in the city, you can then go Piccolo as a playable character.
Oh boy, the absolute man.
This is my jam. I was cutting about as Piccolo for fucking ages, man. To my detriment, as I'll discuss in a minute. So I was running about West City, grin, just checking out everybody. I was walking about it like the Bleater Street, getting all the lore and all that. They kept telling me about Triceratopses in the next town, watch out and all that, but I love it, going about, and they were telling me about how the city was made, what's actually happening in the world, what they're all looking forward to and all that. And well, your back's turned at one point, a wee guy fucking steals a key off you, and he runs away and you've got to chase him, and eventually you get told you've got to chase him into, like, a dungeon, which is a big Triceratops forest. So I went into this Triceratops forest, I started battling the fuck out of everything as Piccolo. I'm smashing absolutely fucking everything up. I got to, like, level 19. I realised that Gohan was still sitting at level 5. So I was like, I better fucking GMT. But I didn't mind it because the battle system was just so...
Is there any reason to level up Gohan? Like, do you get to a point where, I don't know, maybe... Like, in the cartoon, Vegeta's the one that fights Android 19, right? If you're Piccolo and you try to fight Android 19, does the game go, oh no, Vegeta's got to do that? So is that if you, some of your guys are on lower levels, you're going to suffer? Or can you power through the entire game as Piccolo if you want to?
I don't think so. I think you've got to use Vegeta's Super Saiyan abilities at one point and all that. But as I said, the game isn't like, it can't be taken. You know how in Zelda, like, you've got to like, take like, a day off work, man, and get through one of the temples?
Aye.
And us, it's just like, we set piece, move on, we set piece, move on. That Triceratops second game sort of becomes a wee bit like Pac-Man, a bit. You've got to dodge Triceratops, it's a bit of a puzzle, a bit of a pain in the arse, to be honest with you.
But this is a difference between a handheld and a console game. You have to put in a lot of save points and have maybe something that you can be satisfied playing on a 20-minute train journey to work. Save it, turn it off, go and do something else. But you think it achieves that quite well?
I do. For instance, like, here's a wee bit too. So, just out of the blue, I'm trying to progress the game, and there's a guy going, oh, man. Oh, no. I've crashed my school bus, and there's Wayne scattered over the forest, and there's, like, scary cats in there with denim jackets on. Like, go and find them.
I like the cats with the denim jackets. They're pretty funny.
So you've got to go in and find the kids. So you spend like a wee 5 minutes just collecting... This is going to sound horrible. You spend about 5 minutes collecting kids in the forest. And taking them back. Just things like that, wee fetch quests, man, that are good because you get to that battle system, you get to fight. And it's just so simple. It's great to look at. Music's fucking amazing too, by the way. I think this is a Willie Faulkner soundtrack it's based on.
My understanding of Dragon Ball Z is that there's a lot of kind of big sweeping battles and kind of epic scope.
Aye,
but there's also these weird wee kind of vignettes and kind of funny wee side things that happen as well. And this game, maybe because it's a handheld game, tends to kind of focus on that stuff, like the kind of weird little side events and stuff, like, you know, fanning about in the West City and rescuing kids and all sorts of weird bits and bobs. Maybe it changes later in the game, but I was struck by how kind of like not epic it feels, at least at the start.
What I will say is that what you're talking about, the big epic fucking battles, that's one thing that is absent for this game. For instance, you know that scene I was talking about when Frieza gets chopped up? Well, aye. I was like, oh, I wonder what this is going to look like, man. Like on a handheld, and how the day it is, it's just a wee stupid slice and it falls over in two. See, when you're fighting the bosses in this, it's no different to any other wee fight. There's no bells and whistles, it's just you and a big fucking sprite all itself jumping about, just going side to side, trying to hit each other. And there's no smoke and mirrors, these are just two sprites going ahead, man.
It's never going to give you those big cinematic fights, is it?
But I've got to say, I enjoyed it more, two sprites just kind of circling each other.
Aye.
Fucking sumo wrestlers.
I like them doing something else with the Dragon Ball formula. As Mick was saying, it's fighting game, fighting game, fighting game. I think there's probably overlap. There's definitely fucking overlap, let's be honest, with RPG fans and Dragon Ball fans. So marrying the two together and doing it in a... This is a wee cult classic. Like, Aaron's got this thing right where whenever we went on holiday back in the day, he would always just become obsessed with a game and end up missing his holiday. But when we went to Esterty in Catalonia, he spent his entire time in a wee bit where people played pool and just Metal Slug 3 for like a week. When we went to Florida, we went to like an American mall and you could buy this, you could buy Legacy of Goku 2, and it wasn't out in the UK, I don't think. And Aaron bought that and spent the rest of the fucking week in Florida. Because this is when we were like when Helen was away and when my parents had a wee bit more money, I was maybe like 15 or 16 or something, and we went to Florida for like a week. But Aaron spent his entire fucking holiday with his neck bent down looking at a fucking Game Boy Advance because he couldn't get off this. He loved it.
Aye, and it is very addictive. I've not got a lot bad to say about this game at all. The only problem I encountered was the leveling up one character too much and the other one didn't they level up automatically. I mean, that's just hit and miss, isn't it? You get that in some games and you get it and you don't get it in other games. You could play as I didn't get the Goku, but you could go Gohan, Piccolo, that's the two I used mostly. You get to go Vegeta at one point and he's gets his Super Saiyan power up, which makes him go faster. I know, it's kind of like going Super Sonic. I thought it was pretty cool, man. And you get to go Future Trunks as well. So you get to control quite a lot of the Dragon Ball characters here. And, I mean, for me, I like the Freezer storyline. That's probably my favourite. But the Cell storyline is probably my second favourite. So to see like the Cell saga playing out on a speed 2D screen was fucking pretty cool. I enjoyed that as well. I'd see how they pulled that off.
Did you get to your beloved BK Cell? Did you make that? Did you get that far in advance in the game?
Aye, I managed to fight Cell. Aye. and as I said, it was great.
How was he?
Aye, doable, man, doable. You just, they move about. That's, the thing is, there's no tricks in this game. The game just presents itself as what it is. This guy's level fucking 20, this guy's level 30, right, okay, you can keep coming to me, I'm going to keep beating your ass, but you need to go back and fucking train. They don't call it grinding, they call it training. That's another cool one.
Aye.
And you can go and train against cats with denim jackets, flying things that shoot fucking beams at you, snakes, a wide variety of things. There's no poison fucking status, which is fucking amazing. Brilliant. And you learn new moves with these things called golden capsules as well that you can collect throughout the...
Your man Piccolo is the best for grinding in this. Like, go into a screen with a couple of tough enemies, charge up your special beam cannon, let it out, kill them all, pick up the energy again, walk in and out, do it over and over, and you'll just get level after level.
Killing Imperfect Cell with Super Saiyan Vegeta was just... I remember sitting there and going, this is fucking... this is cool, man.
Aye.
This is cool. I mean, I'm really enjoying myself here. And it was one of them things that I love in games. I got it with a River City Ransom game.
Aye.
Hard to put down. Because you're always onto something that's just as fun as the previous thing. There's no lull. There's no kind of downtime. In RPGs, sometimes you get pure downtime where it starts to talk about like philosophical undercurrents of what fucking certain magic is and all that, and a big cutscene about good and evil.
Aye.
No, this, man, it's just, here's the action, right, you need to train a wee bit, right, go and do this, man, go and fucking pick this up, right, oh no, man, there's Namex missing, you need to go and find the Namex. Right, back into it, right, now you can go and do this wee fucking bit with Triceratops. Watch out, man, because you can't kill them, but they'll kill you, so you've got to time out their movement so you can get to the boss, and then you get to the boss, and you just use what you've learnt to beat them in real time with real moves, punching and kicking and shooting bombs at people.
I could tell you were enjoying it for the chat, man.
It's good, man. And you die a lot, but it's a good death. My fucking gripe about that game that was like Metroid, what was it? Castlevania Symphony of Night. When you died, aye, you died a lot in that game, right? But it took about 3.5 hours to get back into it.
Aye, it screamed and there was a big cutscene and all that, aye.
Like I said, Goku, you die. It just shows you a thing, Resident Evil style, you have died. Press OK.
You're a wee angel.
Aye. It takes you right back out to the new game, load game. Bang, bang, you're back in. Back in 2 seconds and you're just outside where you died.
What would annoy me about that is that you... surely if I die, I get to run up Snake Way and go and meet King Kai on his planet. Like, come on.
Aye. I don't know, man. The safe state must have found all the Dragon Balls and made a wish to get you off it early. But this is a game that I'm going to go back to. I heard there's a sequel. The Boo Saga. See that fucking horrible looking pig thing?
Aye. Legacy of Goku 1, for some reason, is not as well regarded. Maybe they hadn't worked out some of the kinks. 2, people like a lot. And then the third gen, which I think is called Boo's Fury. I don't know why they didn't call it Legacy of Goku 3, but it didn't sell as well. Maybe because they didn't call it Legacy of Goku 3, but it is the third one in this series. And again, it's got different characters and the gameplay is pretty much the same, apparently.
It's pretty good, man. Aye, the music as well. I think I mentioned the music, but it's fantastic.
Aye.
The music's good.
Bears with machetes. great.
I like as well the wee kind of gangster guys, the heavies that you meet when the wee guy steals the key. They're dressed like kind of old-timey pirates, but they've got fucking bazookas. They just immediately all start firing bazookas at you, which I thought was a bit excessive.
He's completely pointless, that wee guy. He's like, oh, fuck, man. Ah, I stole your key, but see that guy you got the autograph off of? You know, he's a complete fucking wanker, and I just wanted to wind him up. But so here's your key back. And oh, by the way, I'm a sorcerer, so I'll take off that charm that's on the door I couldn't get through.
I really like the way Akira Toriyama draws motors. They're always these funny kind of pokey looking wee things. And I like the way he draws guns as well. And the fact that guns in his cartoons and his games and that are always used for like comedic effect. Like they get shot in Dragon Ball and like dies. Somebody will whip out a machine gun and start spraying bullets. But all that happens is that people just kind of dance a bit, or they like ping off Goku's forehead because he's so powerful.
I get the impression that a lot of the design of the world a Dragon Ball is kind of based around his limitations. He's like an artist and a designer. Like, oh, can I draw a hoose? Fuck it, they all live in capsules.
Aye.
Can I draw a motor? Fuck, they all drive like wee kind of blobby Vespa type things.
But that makes it such a unique... Like, those wee capsule hooses, fucking weird igloo things people love it live in. I love that as well. I love everything fucking about the world design.
This game uses Mode 7 as well, which is, see, to get from area to area. You know how in some RPGs, including Final Fantasy, you can go into this kind of Mode 70 section to fly?
Usually when you jump into an airship, you'll fly about.
Well, they've done it really well in this one, because it makes you feel like you're flying from battlefield to battlefield.
Aye.
Like cartoons. And they make you feel like that on just pure bare bones assets. Very cool, man.
But you reckon you'll maybe go back to this and finish it, and also that it's a recommendation?
Absolutely, aye. Absolutely. I mean, you can't go wrong with Dragon Ball Z story. And because I know the story, I'm familiar with it, it's just so fucking cool to play. A wee thing that's just... It's optimised so well for handheld. Barton fuck out a Dr. Gero, Cell, big triceratopses, bears with machetes, and cats with denim jackets.
You like your bears with machetes?
Like your bears with machetes. purple cats with leather jackets, kind of like Roger Klotz.
Aye. They're an upgrade for your denim jacket ones.
Aye. But there's supposed to be funky things happening too. Like, all of a sudden, like, you're having the biggest war of your life with all these kind of robots, and you're like just fucking looking for respite. And then there's like a pure big like fucking like party wagon, like a big Wayne's party happening in the middle of the forest, and you're like, what are you doing having a party here, man? This place is fucking hell on earth. And they're just like, oh, chill out, man. And you're like, what? But then you realise you're Vegeta, and it's probably just you that's the problem, you know?
In closing, right, Andy, if you had the seven Dragon Balls, what would you wish for?
What would I wish for if I had seven Dragon Balls? Oh, now you're a... Oh, man.
I was expecting you to just say a fucking 32X or something like that.
Well, aye, Shenmue 4 with the Virtua Fighter system. Give me that.
There you go.
I'll be happy with that.
McCormick, you've got all seven Dragon Balls. What are you wishing for?
Disco Elysium 2.
That's a mic drop.
I'm going to do as Autumn and wish for Scottish independence. You're welcome.
I wish kind of granted to me yesterday, man. I went for a walk.
Uh-huh.
And I thought to myself, sun's out, it's beautiful. I'm going to go up to Lyle Park, which is my favourite haunt, man. I like going up there and sitting. Sun's out. And I get kind of drunk, man. I drank a couple of wee magnums and I thought, you know what? I'm going to go to the Biscuit.
You hate a magnum.
Oh, man. So I went to the Biscuit. And I noticed as I was approaching the Biscuit that there was life forms there. And I was like, no way, man. Because any time I go to the Biscuit, it's just pure relic.
You sense some power levels.
Sense some power levels, aye. And there's wee guys building a fire. And I was like, oh, fucking brilliant. I was like, lads, all right, what's happening? And these guys must have been about 19, 20, maybe 21. And I was telling them, oh, man, you're fucking this place we used to call it Biscuit. This is actually like a bunker for the World War and all that, blah, blah, blah. And I was telling them loads of stories about what used to do and all that.
They must have been like, who is this old cunt?
I've just appeared out of a bush telling them stories about the Biscuit. And I could tell they were kind of bored, so I was like, right, lads, I'll leave yous be, man. Take care of this place, because it does mean a lot, isn't it? And we're all big, man. Like, thanks very much for this. And that. I was like, they were. gave me a flag and that, and I don't even smoke, but they gave me a cig and went, nice to meet you and all that. And I was like, nah, fucking Biscuit Boys on tour, and left. And I was like, fucking hell, I can't believe that just happened. But I've had my wish. I don't need seven Dragon Boys, man. Seven Magnums.
There you go. Seven Magnums up a biscuit. Right. Will we dish out our games for next time? Next time was actually Andy's idea. He wants to bring us back to the arcade. We're going to just do a loose arcade picks episode. Mr. McCormick, we'll start with you. What have you got for myself?
So I'm going to give you possibly the final boss of Andy's David Dickinson hours is going to be present on our next episode, because we're talking about Radiant Silver Gun.
Tasty.
Which got ported to the Sega Saturn and but was on the arcade originally.
And it's a treasure, bad boy. We always love to give the treasure a shout out. Andy, for yourself, I'm going to go for something that we mentioned in a last episode, but no really. We're going for Alien versus Predator. But no the shooter Alien versus Predator, the arcade beat 'em up from Capcom, I think. It's a side scroller, Alien versus Predator. So we'll see how you got on with that. Andy, what have you got for Mr. McCormick?
Right, okay. So we briefly mentioned, we've not picked it, it's not been on yet. Die Hard Arcade, we're going to come back to that at some point. Obviously, its name is Dynamite Decker in Japan. I'm going to give Mick Dynamite Decker 2, also known as Dynamite Cop.
Unawaited.
Right, well, all that's left to say from me is up the workers.
Hardcore to the mega.
You've heard the best, you hear the best. Andy Mack. Oh, well, disco.
You fucked up again.
I know, you fucker. I'll get it right next time. Next time, I promise. Next time.
See you later.